Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts.
Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Diary, the day after the end of an unbelievable Stanley Cup final. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Obviously, the main story of the day, reaction to the Stanley Cup final with, you know, some other things happening as well. We will get into all of it, but let's start with what the world is talking about in the sports world anyway. The Stanley Cup final goes to the Florida Panthers. I just can't believe the Florida Panthers pulled it off last night, winning Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final 2-1 to hoist the Stanley Cup for the first time in franchise history. It felt like everything was going against Florida in this game and in this series. And credit to them, they were able to pull it off. And just quickly before we get going here, if you want more of my kind of instant reaction, that was over on Game Over. So check that out wherever, or here on YouTube, on the Game Over Network. But I couldn't envision a world where they were able to bounce back after losing three straight games so convincingly. But credit to them, they did bounce back and they got the job done. Said it yesterday, the start was going to be big, and the Florida Panthers came out with a big start. They came out firing. They looked like the quicker team. They looked like the harder working team, and they got that early lead. It didn't last a whole long. It didn't last that long, but they were never in the chase position, and I thought that was so important because of how Edmonton can play when they take that lead. I think from a Florida standpoint, to be able to get that lead and then get it again late in the second period and have that 2-1 lead hold up as the win, I thought was just, I mean, obviously holding up as the win part is pretty important. They won the Stanley Cup off of it. But to get that early lead, to get that confidence, like, hey, we... Remember how good we were for the 15 wins that we got previous to this? Remember that? Let's get back to that, shall we? And they were able to get back to that. And so credit to them for being able to get into that spot. And I thought Sergei Bobrovsky was massive in this game. He was, at times, the best player on the ice. And maybe they didn't, like, I don't think he stole this game for them or anything like that. But given the Sergei Bobrovsky we saw in games 4-6, he was so much better than that. And he was so improved from that standpoint. So for him to be able to come out and put those games behind him and come away with a victory in this one, and on his team, he would have been, I think, the Conn Smythe Trophy favorite. To be able to do that is incredible. And what a switch in the view of his legacy, just off of this one win. And it's wild to think about how much changes off of one game for all of these players, right? But for Bobrovsky, for a long time, it was a view like, man, this guy, when he is on, he is one of the most talented goalies in the world, but he just can't put it together, and I just don't know if that's a guy you win with. He's now won two Vezinas, he's won a Stanley Cup championship, and he has proven without a shadow of a doubt, he is a guy you can win with. He was spectacular throughout this postseason, and then specifically in this Stanley Cup final. I've talked a lot about different guys who raised that level. Sergei Bobrovsky found that other level, lost it, and then found it again, but he found that other level, and he was able to get back to it in Game 7. And it came close to not happening a couple times, those scramble plays in front, but he was there every step of the way. And look, he got a lot of help as well. I thought this team defensively played one hell of a hockey game last night. Their work keeping Edmonton to the outside, but also putting pressure on the puck carrier and just not really giving the Oilers a whole lot to work with. I thought defensively that this was one of their better games of the series. I thought once again, you guys know I've been talking about this guy, Aaron Ekblad, Not that I'm the only one who's talking, guys, former first overall pick, what are we doing here? But he is a guy who you like just lock in on as someone who really stood up defensively. And I brought it up in game overall. I'll bring it up here. There was that play late in the game. And I get, like, McDavid at that point is just on fumes, man. But McDavid is coming in. And with 5 minutes left, game seven, it's a one goal game. How many guys get overwhelmed by the moment, try to make a play, it ends up being the wrong one, they overcommit one side or the other, McDavid can just spin around him, all of a sudden you have the best player in the world within 3 feet of your goal with a one goal lead in the Stanley Cup final. But Ekblad stays patient, he stays perfectly calm, and just a little poke check. And we talked about it with Andrew Berkshire on Game Over last night. That felt like just the entire of everything just settled everything down. And I thought that was so important for them. And such a key play for this team. And then Barkov was unreal. The work that he did on Connor McDavid in game 6 and 7. And I kind of singled him out as someone who offensively didn't look overly confident, but he, whatever confidence they were lacking, they got back in this game seven. And I, like I said, I think that start is so important to it. And I think Barkov was a big part of it, but there wasn't really a real standout. Again, we talked about this on Game Over. I actually, like, when you're looking at guys who, like, really picked up, I thought Vlad Tarasenko had a really, really good game. I meant to mention this last night and I forgot, but Tarasenko, I thought just some of those subtle plays, whether it is a good play on the wall, he made a really nice defensive play when there was a bit of a scramble at the top of the zone, and Tarasenko is able to just do a bit of a, oh, just let me get that out of there, thank you, let's go on our way. Like, he reaches in, picks it out, and then off we go. I thought he did such a great job in this one, in just kind of getting the puck moving in the right way. He wasn't a difference maker at all, necessarily, but I just thought he made a lot of those little plays that are really key. I believe he was the only one in this game who had played in the Stanley Cup Final Game 7. He looked calm, he looked composed, and now that we've kind of transitioned into this point in his career where he is more of a secondary piece, I think he has kind of figured out that role here with the Florida Panthers, and I think he has fit into it perfectly. So we'll see what ends up happening with him. But like I said, there wasn't really that one dude who just took over. This was just a complete team effort by a complete Florida Panthers team. And we talked about it coming into this series. We talked about it throughout the playoffs. They can play any style they want. But at the heart of that is that hardworking nature of this team. And they had that throughout game seven, winning those puck battles. Like I said, Tarasenko, where there's a bit of chaos at the top of the zone, just get that puck out of there and get it moving down. They played with a greater pace than Edmonton did, which was something that did not that I was not expecting going into that. And they were really able to show what they were able to do. And to think of winning this Cup Final series with minimal from Bennett and with Tkachuk, it's quite impressive. And this is a Florida Panthers team to be reckoned with. But it's also a team, you just feel so happy for so many pieces on this team. Like Paul Maurice, I know he can sometimes rub some people the wrong way, but how do you not love what he said after game seven? I thought he coached a really good seventh game, utilizing his depth, rolling everything, kind of knowing when to push what buttons. And tactically, I thought someone mentioned in our comments, like the defense was pinching a little bit more in those three games where everything was kind of getting away from them. I thought they did a good job of kind of backing off and not really giving, like, Edmonton had the puck a bunch, but they didn't give Edmonton those rush chances that really set things off in the three-game winning streak that Edmonton had. They kept those transition moments to a minimum, and that ended up limiting what Edmonton was able to do. But then him talking about, like, his parents, and now he has his family name alongside the heroes of his dad. Like, it's just, you get emotional thinking about it, and you get emotional talking about it. I'm really happy for Sam Reinhart. Guy is a very, very high draft pick. There's so much pressure. It doesn't work out, and he's gone. And he ends up being a difference maker, and he ends up scoring the game-winning goal in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. He had an incredible pending UFA season. The dude is going to get paid, but just you just feel so ecstatic for what he was able to accomplish in this one. Kyle Okposo, another player that I feel really happy about. Guy has battled everywhere he's gone, but he gets that big contract. He's kind of labeled a guy you can't really win with. And look, I was down on him at various points. But again, to come into this depth role and fill it out that way, that was great. And then he gets to play in Game 7, and now he is a Stanley Cup champion after so long in this league. And just the Florida Panthers in general. If you have been a hardcore Panthers fan, I was going to say you're not alone, but you, at points you are. This was a fan base that was mocked by media, specifically up here north of the border. This was a team that was mentioned in the same breath as the Arizona Coyotes, who as of today don't exist anymore. That is where this franchise was for a really, really long time. And they have come in and they have turned things around. And you look at guys who are so important in that. Barkov, the first Finnish captain to win a Stanley Cup in the history of the National Hockey League. You look at Ekblad and how important he was in turning this thing around. And you look at a guy who's not there anymore, Jonathan Huberdeau, and how important he was for a long time in turning the Florida Panthers into that dangerous team. And then Florida has to make the difficult decision of moving on from a guy who was so important for that group and bring in another guy who was massive in getting them over the hump in Matthew Tkachuk. But they went from being a laughing stock franchise and kind of a model for what not to do in the NHL to a team that now for 3 years has a pretty consistent run of being one of the best teams in the National Hockey League and a team that a lot of franchises are going to try to model themselves after. I genuinely never thought we would get here with the Florida Panthers. I thought it was more likely they would be in Quebec than they would be hoisting the Stanley Cup for a time. And now here they are, Stanley Cup champions, with not much of an end in sight for this team. On the opposite end of it, it is heartbreak for the Edmonton Oilers. That was such an unbelievable comeback for Edmonton in this series. All season long, having to battle out of a hole that they dug themselves, but having to battle back, and they get so close. Even in this game, down 2-1, or at least, like, look, down 1-0. Doesn't faze them. They come back, they score that goal. Reinhardt gets a goal late-ish in period number 2, and they have to keep battling, and they have to keep battling, and they came that close. They have that scramble. Ekholm's pointing like it's in. That's how close it was to Edmonton being able to cash with 3 minutes left, and they just ran out. And it felt like that last little scramble there with 3 minutes left was everything they had. And like, just to show you how close they were, when Reinhardt scores that goal, moments before that happens, Draisaitl with kind of a jam play at the side of the goal, and it just trickles. As the story goes along, Oilers fans, that will get closer and closer and closer and closer to the point where, oh yeah, it's scraped off of the post. It probably missed by a foot or two, but it just trickles wide. Florida comes back and Reinhardt puts the puck on net, and that's your winner. That's how close they can. That's how close they came. But really and honestly, it feels like they ran out of gas. This team, by the end of this game, specifically McDavid and Draisaitl, and this is not a knock on them at all. It felt like they had nothing left by the end of it. Having to come back from that bad start, including the loss to San Jose to end San Jose's losing streak. Down 3-2 against Vancouver on the road for Game 7. Down 2-1 against the Dallas Stars as the lower seed in that series as well. Down 3-0 in this series, and down 1-0 and 2-1 in this game. They just kept having to battle back and battle back and battle back. And it was just one last hurdle that just felt too much for this team. And again, that is not in any way, shape, or form me criticizing these guys. Again, in any way, they are, and they were, absolutely tremendous. And I think, like, Connor McDavid reached another level. And Draisaitl was obviously banged up throughout this series, and they gave it everything they had. They just didn't have anything left by the end. And you can look at, like, we were talking about the need for other players to step up early in this series. And Andrew brought this up on Game Over, and I completely agree. I don't think they trusted the depth enough late in this game. Like, it felt like McDavid and Draisaitl were out there for the last 5 minutes, and I don't think that is much of an exaggeration. I think, like, the way Henrik was, or the way Janmark was going, Henrik had a pretty good chance. I think you have to trust those guys just a little bit more in the final period of this game to give McDavid and Draisaitl a real legitimate breather to get back out there and get it going. This one, I'm not saying that cost them the Stanley Cup or anything like that. Although, if Edmonton scores, I think they're winning. If they tie that game up, I think they're winning in overtime. But it's a very easy thing to fall back on when you have two of the five best, maybe even two of the three best players in the world on your team. Yeah, I'll put them out there for as long as they can stand so we can get back in this thing and try to win it. When you're down by one in game seven, I fully understand that, but it just felt like it got to them at the end. When you take a look now at the bigger picture with Edmonton, I think it is easy to say, oh yeah, they'll be back. But it doesn't. It doesn't feel like this is the last time that they'll be back, right? Like, it does feel like, yes, McDavid reaches another level that we didn't even think was possible. They have a good mix at forward, assuming they bring a lot of those guys back. They have a goalie that, for the most part, you trust in these games. And they do have some holes to fill. But with a defenseman or two that you trust, I feel like this roster can be really good. Like, we talked about it last night. If you let CeCe go, attach a pick to trade him out, and you bring in a Nikita Zadorov, and you go Nurse Broberg, Bouchard, Ekholm, and Kulak against and Zadorov as your top six. That's not like if that same roster was here in Calgary with the forward group they have, we would be saying, okay, well, the rebuild is still on. But because you have McDavid and Draisaitl, that D is good enough that you can get back here. They only have $10 million in cap space, and they only have 14 roster spots filled right now. So they have to get creative. I would not be surprised if we get a Jack Campbell buyout in this time. I would try to move on from CeCe and Kane and try to get some cap space that way and be able to maneuver a few things. So they're absolutely going to have to be creative, but obviously the foundation is there. Now the bad news. They do have extensions for Bouchard, Draisaitl, and McDavid coming up in the next couple of years. And also, the Avalanche, Golden Knights, Stars, and I'll put Canucks in here, probably aren't going anywhere. The Kings are going to be interesting. I think the Jets are pretty close, given how good their goalie can be. The West is going to be a gauntlet. At some point, you have to figure Chicago is just going to be in this conversation again because of how damn good Connor Bedard is, right? And so I do think you have to, you do have to, like, really worry about things from an Oilers standpoint. But the Oilers deserve to be in that conversation, that this isn't just a fluke one-time thing. This is a team that absolutely deserves to be considered among the best of the best in the National Hockey League right now. And I was so entertained by this series, man. And I think from an Oilers fan standpoint, I think it's obviously heartbreaking today. This one is going to take a while to get over for sure. And I do think eventually, though, A, you will appreciate what an amazing run this was, and B, I do think that this will just be part of the story for Connor McDavid and part of the story for the Edmonton Oilers. Okay, let us move on now, and let's talk about the Canadian Football League.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Week 3 in the books in the CFL. Obviously a lot of the attention this week on the Stanley Cup Final. But the Saskatchewan Roughriders coming up with a pretty easy win in their home opener against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And this was a pretty complete effort from Saskatchewan. While Trevor Harris was in there, the offense looked on point. You got the run game going a little bit. Ouellette seemed banged up. And I was surprised at the amount that they used him in this game, even while he was obviously limping. But he looked like he was getting going, which means the offensive line was getting going. The receiving core looked great again. And it was everyone coming up with big plays. And then defensively, they were dominant. They put They still didn't put a ton of pressure on Bo Levi Mitchell, but the secondary at least didn't create a whole lot of throwing lanes for him. And they did a really good job of getting hands on passes and just creating a little bit of havoc. Saskatchewan does get the scare with Trevor Harris going down with an injury. Sounds like he'll be all right. I wonder if that game was closer, if Harris would have just gone back into it anyway. But this is one where the bye comes at a really good time for Saskatchewan. With Harris banged up, with Ouellette banged up, I do think that this is a team that is going to benefit greatly from what happens here with this bye week. On the Hamilton side, I still think that there is a good football team here. And again, I think Bo Levi Mitchell is turning or has turned a corner back to what he was in Calgary as a starter. I don't think he's going to win MOP or anything like that, but he looks good, but he looks shook in this game. After he fumbles that football, he really tried to force it, and it just seemed like it was bad choices all over the place, and he's caught between trying to force it to White, trying to force it to push the ball down the field, and it just took him completely out of this game. This was one where they needed some deep cleansing breaths and be able to kind of calm down, settle into this game, and really get this offense rolling. They didn't really have that this week, and I do think I do think that they will be able to bounce back, but this was a bit of a concerning one because of just how off everything looked once the wheels started to fall off. Out in Toronto, this offense looks electric. Dukes, it looks like the real deal. He was given a ton of time, but he looked calm, he looked composed. Like, you look at Patterson for Saskatchewan, obviously different points. Like, Dukes has been prepping to be the starter for a while now. Patterson got thrown in there in the middle of the game, but Patterson looked shook. He looked shaken. He looked like panicked, like, okay, where do I go? Where do I go? What do I do? What do I do? There's none of that in Dukes' game. He looks calm. He is obviously athletic enough and quick enough that he can run if he needs to, but he's not looking to do that. And you look at, like, they have three running backs that you trust. McMahon looked really good. Adebadio, looked really good out of the backfield as well. And then Kadeem Carey looks every bit like the guy who led this league in rushing a couple of years ago. And all of their receivers are making plays downfield. Like, they just have a tall, lanky, high catch radius, really athletic group that is out there that can really push the ball down the field. So credit to them for that. The defense isn't really impressive, though. That is a concern, that they weren't really able to get a whole lot going. They do have some guys who can put pressure on the quarterback, but I have been surprised through the first couple of weeks how easy it is to score points on this team. And for Edmonton, like, the offense looked good. The defense couldn't stop anything. And if Toronto could get one or two stops, like, it felt like they could have really locked this game down, but they just could not get anything stopped against McLeod Bethel Thompson. And then in one of the bigger games of the week on Friday night, it was Winnipeg. And it looked, they didn't get the win, but they finally got going a little bit. Caleros looked better. It started working towards the end. The way they were able to efficiently move the football down the field in the short passing game was, I think, a really, really good sign. And, like, Oliveira is going to continue to get better and continue to work his way back into this. Lawler is going to get his way back into the offense. Now, it comes at a time where they're losing Schoen, and it sounds like for a while that was such an important part of that offense. But I wonder if that now forces, like, you still have a Wolitarski who can kind of play in that role, not to just sub in white guy for white guy. But I think they need to get a little bit more going with Nick Dembski. And I'm not saying any of this is Dembski's fault. I just think he is a guy that still, you just get the ball in his hands and let him go. And I have critiqued guys like that in the past, but he is absolutely one of those guys who can be effective in that route, in that role. And on the BC side, like, there isn't a whole lot. Like, this off, like, Vernon Adams is still really good. They have Hollins, who is a factor. They have McInnes, who is excellent as well. I would like a little bit more from this defense, but they're a very good football team. That is going to do it for the CFL side. We're going to get into CFL power rankings coming up tomorrow. Let's move now into the fight game. It is UFC 303 coming up this weekend. This was supposed to be one of the biggest fight cards of the year. It's not anymore, but there's still some intriguing storylines. Here's what I'm watching for heading into UFC 303, International Fight Week. UFC 303 goes down this weekend from Las Vegas, Nevada. In the main event, it is now for the light heavyweight championship, Alex Pereira taking on Yuri Prochazka. And I do these always at the start of the week. What are the early storylines? And the biggest storyline here is who's not here. Conor McGregor pulling out of this fight, we now know it's because he got a broke toe. And this is those like, are you willing to do the road work at 5 a.m. when you're waking up in satin sheets? If this is Conor McGregor 5 years from 5 years ago, he is amputating that toe and throwing it at Jose Aldo. But my guy's financially set. He doesn't need to go in there with a broken toe, so he's not going in there with a broken toe. I wouldn't fight anyone with a broken toe, but I wouldn't fight 100% of this roster. There is not one of them I would want to lock myself in a cage with for any amount of time. But it is frustrating that all of this was going on, and it's like, it was a toe? Really? Like, John Jones's toe was sideways when he beat Chael Sonnen. So, again, not to question the toughness of anyone, but for someone who goes out there and talks about being a warrior and all of that, it just felt very unwarrior-like. So it feels like there is a lot missing from this. But once again, Alex Pereira is here to save the day. And a lot of my talk has kind of been centered around this guy's legacy. I talked about it coming out of UFC 300. Let's just get this guy a heavyweight fight now, right? Like, he called for a heavyweight fight. I don't know why they didn't do it in Brazil. If this guy's going to be fighting on short notices anyway. I just feel like this is someone who is so unique in how he came into the sport, how quickly he has rocketed through things, and is now just kind of the guy who saves big cards. He saved UFC 300. He's now saving International Fight Week. The two biggest cards this company is going to have this year, and he has saved both of them. And I don't think this one really enhances the legacy too much, unless this is a fighter who goes out there and just puts an absolute stomping on Prochazka again, much like he did in his last bout there against Jamahal Hill, where he just absolutely leveled that poor guy. I don't think this enhances the legacy at all for him, but this is going to be another opportunity to showcase that this is one of the best fighters in the world. For Prochazka, I just wonder how much he has learned since losing to Pereira back at UFC 295. He only has one fight since then, and it was a win over Rakic. And you think about the glory of victory and the agony of defeat. He loses at UFC 295 in Madison Square Garden to Pereira. Pereira's in the main event of the biggest card of the year at UFC 300. Prochazka's on the prelims. That has to be in Prochazka's mind. Like, look, man, and like all this glory you're getting right now, that should be mine if I can go out there and beat you. You took that from me too. So now I am coming to try to take that from you. The problem is, I just don't know if we've had enough time for Prochazka to close that gap. Even on the fighter that we saw Pereira to be back at UFC 295. Now we are all of these ways through. I feel like Pereira is getting better. Now, Prochazka is as well, but I don't know if he's closed the gap to the fighter that Pereira was, let alone the guy who is growing now. The one thing that you hope for in a fight like this, I think, if you're Prochazka, and it does sound like I'm being very dismissive of Prochazka's abilities. Like, he is one of the best light heavyweight fighters in the world. There is absolutely no question about it. I just feel like Pereira is on another level. And if you are going to come in and pull off the upset, you're hoping that the unique style that Prochazka can come out there with does kind of fluster someone who hasn't had all this time to prepare. Problem is, Pereira's prepared and dealt with it before, so I don't think there's going to be anything that surprises him coming into this one with Prochazka, but we will see how much he has closed the gap coming up Saturday night. In the co-main event, Diego Lopez put on a show at UFC 300, and now he gets the biggest fight of his career. Again, on short notice, he goes up against Brian Ortega, and so the real question around this is this too much for Lopez, or is his time now? Because he has been running through fools. And the initial response always for me is, it might be a bit too soon. But when you look at going from Yusuf into this fight, the way he dispatched with Yusuf, it actually feels like a natural progression of things to go in here against a Brian Ortega. So the big question now, coming off of one of the biggest spotlights of the year in UFC 300, now that spotlight is really focused on Lopez. It's not spread out to 15, 18 fighters like we talked about at UFC 300. A lot of it is going to be on Diego this weekend. How does he handle that? And what type of performance does he put on? Because if this is another big fight, another big performance from Lopez, UFC could have another star on their hands very easily. He's going up against Brian Ortega, who snapped a 2-fight losing streak in a win over Yair Rodriguez. Now taking on another explosive prospect, that is going to be difficult for him. And so for Ortega, the real question is, like, how much is still left there for a guy who got very close, title contention, title challenger, very talented fighter, but has fallen on some hard times against great fighters. Like, he lost 2 in a row to Volkanovski and Yair Rodriguez. Many a man would lose to both of those guys. And then to bounce back with a win over Rodriguez, does a victory here over Lopez, maybe does that even get him back into title contention, but a loss here, and that's just, it's a lot of red on the resume for Ortega. So a really, really big fight that he is taking on short notice here this weekend. That not the only big show that is happening in the combat sport adjacent world this weekend, as it is AEW Forbidden Door. Let's talk about it. AEW Forbidden Door is this weekend, and oh boy, do they need it to be a banger. This needs to be an unreal show. This needs to be an unreal week of AEW. And I have talked before a few times that, hey, you know what? Feels like they're on track. Hey, feels like AEW's back on track. And then it keeps getting off track. The ratings last week are really, really, really alarming. And it's not just that they had one of the worst ratings they've ever had on a Wednesday, but it's the fact that you have your big free agent acquisition in your world title headliner. You have your biggest homegrown star in your opener advertised for a week that he is going to be in a commercial-free opener to start the show, and you still have some of your worst ratings ever. The Forbidden Door concept was really, really cool a couple of years ago, but now, like, a couple of the big reasons why it was so cool is, oh my God, we get to see Will Ospreay, and oh my God, we get to see Kazuchika Okada. Well, got him now. And while I love New Japan and I love CMLL, they just don't have the big talent that is drawing this intrigue of, holy crap, we actually get to see these guys in this ring. A, we've seen all the New Japan guys who have come over a few times now. And so that there isn't that special mystique or anything like that. Two, they're in kind of a rebuilding phase of their own, right? Okada is gone. Ospreay is gone. Tanahashi has moved into a management role, still wrestling a little bit, but he is absolutely not what he used to be, which is fine. But now that they are working on building up some of this young talent, and so while they're in this building phase, it's okay, we're going over to CMLL to get these guys, but they have done jack squat about telling us about why these guys are so awesome. And a lot of them, yeah, just throw them out in the ring, have them do flippy-dippy stuff, and that's really cool, and I absolutely love it, but you've given us nothing to get really invested in a whole lot of these guys, and so basically every match now, the biggest star of these matches is the AEW talent, and if that's going to be the case, I don't know if Forbidden Door needs to be an every-year thing. I think this concept really needs, or really requires, New Japan to have some really hot talent to be able to come in, and really require CMLL to be firing on all cylinders. And that's simply not the case right now. I think it would be more fun to have this talent kind of pop up and have some of these guys do like a 3-month tour with the company instead of, oh, they popped in and now they're doing a ladder match on Sunday. Isn't that sweet? Oh, they lost. Now they're gone again. Like, have these guys actually stick around for a little bit and actually do something with them scattered throughout the year instead of, well, it's Forbidden Door time, so you never know who's going to show up. And oh, look at that. Another guy with a mask came in. And again, like I want to state unequivocally, or however it's pronounced, that so much of the New Japan talent that's going to be on this card this weekend and the CMLL talent that is going to be on the card this weekend are talent that I adore and think the world of. But this concept clearly isn't working. It feels forced, and it just feels like kind of a more of an anchor at this point. And it's so interesting when we're talking about AEW being this alternative to WWE. But now WWE feels like they're firing on all cylinders, and they had another really interesting week, or have another really interesting week coming up. But one of the things that we were so frustrated about when AEW debuted is Hell in a Cell, this big concept that's supposed to be the blow off of all blow off feuds, is now just October. it's whatever feud is happening in October, that is what we get. And sometimes it's hot and deserves it, and sometimes it's not and it doesn't. But they got away from that, which is what we wanted. AEW now, well, it's time, so we're doing Forbidden Door now. And now all of a sudden all this talent is going to come over. Like, it just, it feels like, again, one of the concepts from the WWE that we were trying to get away from when we were looking for AEW to be the alternative. Anyway, there are going to be some amazing matches on this. And one of them is Swerve Strickland against Will Ospreay. And I think the intriguing part of this is both of these guys feel like, oh, you can't beat that guy. Guys, right? Like, it feels like with the Owen Hart being the opportunity at All In for the world, for the number one contender for the world title, it feels like he can't beat Will Ospreay. Because what, are you just going to not have Will Ospreay in your title match at Wembley? But at the same time, this is Swerve's first main event as champion. And it doesn't really feel like this has fully run its course as champion yet. So you can't beat him. So it feels really intriguing. The follow to however this match goes is going to be so important. But these two guys, both of them feel like the biggest stars in the company right now. And just to have them go in there and have this match, I hope there isn't anything screwy. I hope it is a legitimate 1-2-3. And then I hope however they want to spin it back after is effective. Like, I hope we get a legitimate clean finish right in the middle of that ring come Sunday night. But coming up this week, like, what I'm looking for on Dynamite, I think the build for MJF and Okada needs to be huge. And basically everything this week needs to be huge. They need something big for Moxley. This ladder match kind of feels like it's going to be all right. With Jack Perry being at the center of this whole thing. But there's just not a whole lot that feels like a big deal right now. And so this Wednesday genuinely has to feel like one of the biggest Dynamites of all time if we're going to get this thing on track for what we believe this pay-per-view can be coming up on Sunday. All right, that is going to do it for the show. Thank you all so much for tuning in today. You can find me on social media. I am at Primetime Klein, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, twitch.tv/PrimetimePK. Make sure you like the video and subscribe, or if you're listening in podcast form, subscribe and leave a review, and I'll talk to all of you later. I'm out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.